All right. Let's get fired up here.
Maximum freedom. Read.
Stay on target.
Maximum
freedom. Stay on target.
Maximum freedom. Read Rothbard.
Hello and welcome to the next episode of the Read Rothbard podcast. This is number 30, and today we're going to be talking about Idiocracy. How's it going,
really?
Robert?
Man, I'm just living life. A little bit phlegmy. It's super cold. What do you get? It's the wintertime. No. Sorry, in advance, for anyone listening to this.
Yeah, so before we get into it, I got a little bit of housekeeping. As you know, we've been pushing housekeeping. Trigger warning. We're going to say housekeeping in a accent. So as you know, we've been pushing the Liberty Classroom by Tom Woods, and there was a special Black Friday, and the people who signed up for it were entered to win a Pebble smartwatch. Well, Pebble just announced that they are getting acquired by Fitbit, and so I'm going to be reaching out to the people who did purchase and let them know, or let the winner know, that we're going to offer like an alternate prize if you don't want the Pebble. I mean, you may want it. It may be a collector's item going forward, but you know, because they're no longer going to be supporting them, we want to change up the offer to accommodate our listeners and purchasers and all those things.
Super nice.
Yeah, super
You're
nice.
Welcome.
Trying to be nice. And then, you know, just speaking on the Liberty Classroom, there is still a special for the master level. It goes to the end of the month. But if you jump on it now, you can get one of our readit4.me annual memberships. And a cool thing about that is we can also offer a 30-day trial. And that's just for anyone. You can get a 30-day trial from us. And if you do the master membership, then you get that 1 month free. And then you can start the 12 months, so you actually get 13 months out of the deal. So that works out for everyone's favor. I think that's a good deal.
That's what you think.
That's what I think. So speaking of Idiocracy, we were just doing a little pre-show prep call, and we were talking about the idiocy that I exhibited recently on a walk around the neighborhood, trying to take some pictures of kittens on the side of the road whilst wearing gloves and then trying to put my cell phone back in my pocket.
And you knew it was a bad idea at the time.
Yeah, I had that premonition, like, hey, this is probably a really stupid thing to do, but they're cute, so I'm going to do it.
Okay, which is stupider? You doing that, you see some cute kittens, you're walking down the street with your family, and you got these big, fat, fuzzy mittens on, and you try to pull out your phone to take a picture, and then you try to put the phone back in the pocket, which is an impossibility, and then the phone crashes to the ground. Or when the weather is in the negative numbers, temperature range, negative 10 at night, and you don't let the faucets drip, and then your hot water pipe freezes, and then you're without hot water until you can unfreeze the pipes. Which one is stupider?
I got to ask, did you have a premonition about the hot water?
I knew that it was cold. It's not like you can be out here and not realize it, because you go outside and you got to dress up like a Christmas ham in order to even go outside. So I knew it was cold. It just didn't register to my brain that, oh, yeah, not only can human beings freeze outside, but also pipes can freeze outside because water is the thing that freezes. I've experienced ice cubes in the past and snow, which I'm surrounded by. It just didn't register to my brain that, oh, yeah, maybe I should do this thing. Maybe because I'd gotten away with it for a couple of weeks. Like, it had been really cold, but not like negative 10 cold. And the pipes hadn't frozen. So it just didn't occur to me. So which is stupider? I don't know. They're both pretty stupid.
They are both pretty stupid, and they happen to each one of us. So, dear listener, that gives you some idea to the caliber of the intellect you're dealing with here.
Right. Formidable intellects.
Formidable.
So formidable. I was crawling around in my crawl space at 3 a.m. in negative 10 degree weather 2 days ago as a grown human being, which is, I guess, the thing you got to do sometimes as a grown human being. But usually you set things up so that you don't have to do those sort of things. Anyway.
Yeah, well, I think with my premonition of knowing, like getting that gut check feeling like, oh, I should not do this, I should have heeded that. And so I feel like by disregarding that, that was the stupid move on my part. And so that trumps your
you think so?
General awareness of, oh, yeah, things get cold. Because that house has been there for, you know, 20, 30 some odd years or more, right?
Probably.
And it's been cold before, and the pipes are still there. So one would assume that over time the pipes have been, you know, fitted in such a way to where they can withstand that, unless it's, like, super ridiculously good-lookingly cold.
Yeah. Well, it is, although I've heard stories, because people like to tell stories out here, of how cold it has gotten. And supposedly it's gotten into the negative 30s, which at that point you question why people are out here. But I don't know. It's pretty cold. When I went out there and had to crawl around, it was so cold I just started laughing. It was comically cold. I'd never experienced anything that cold, and people are probably have experienced much colder things. But for me, it was a new low.
Now, you're not going all Jack Nicholson in The Shining on me. I mean, you're out there at the Overlook Hotel writing a book all winter in the freezing cold, and you're laughing like a madman?
In my defense, I don't have a family to murder.
Or an axe.
Or did I?
Correct them.
And now they have been murdered, and now I'm alone. Good question.
Well, that's a scary topic. So let's talk about the science behind frozen pipes, because I find this interesting. And apparently 97% of scientists agree that water is the only substance that expands as it cools.
Hence, that's true.
Why pipes break. Everything else condenses and gets smaller, and I find that that is an interesting thing. Now,
Is it because water crystallizes, or is it?
Yeah, I think it gets into a structure that forces it to get larger. Like, the volume can get larger because when it's a liquid, the molecules can relatively be closer. But as it crystallizes, yeah, exactly. It needs to form some kind of a shape, like a square-ish shape. I don't know a whole lot about this. Maybe some of our science experts, some of the 97% can chime in on this. And why this doesn't happen to anything else, I don't know. But that's just kind of an interesting and kind of odd and weird thing about water.
That is weird. The Read, Both, Read podcast, libertarian philosophy, and sometimes weird science-y questions.
Weird science.
That's right. Oh, that's a good movie. Bring Me Back. The popcorn at the end? Or no. That was a different movie?
We should do Weird Science. I think that would be a fun one. Or maybe just the 80s movies in general, and just try to pull some lessons from, like, The Breakfast Club and Weird Science and 16 Candles and shit like that.
Well, see, in Weird Science, they make a woman.
Nothing wrong with that.
When they make a woman, are they responsible for her and what she does? She has an intelligence, right? But she doesn't know anything. Does that have to teach her everything? Is that right, how that movie goes?
Man, it's been so long. You have to watch that one again.
There's hijinks ensue because she's like a fish out of water. She doesn't know anything. She's a blank slate. Tabula rasa. So they're morally responsible for all the sexual hijinks that she gets into. Yeah, we can do that one.
Yeah. So, hey, speaking of Idiocracy, you just experienced about 15 minutes of it right there.
Right. We're on our way, ladies and gentlemen, if you didn't have enough evidence already.
So, Robert, why don't you give us the fuzzy recollection you have from seeing this movie, 10-some-odd years ago? And I'll fill in some color.
Let's ask the guy that hasn't seen the movie recently. Okay, so Luke Wilson is like a Marine or something like that. He's like your average Joe Sixpack. And I forget exactly why, but he's tapped to get into basically like a time capsule. I don't remember if he gets frozen or whatever, but he gets into this time capsule or something like that. And he gets flung into the future. Basically, he just goes to sleep while the world around him changes. And he wakes up to find himself by far the smartest person on the planet. Just everybody else has been reduced to ants on head levels of retardation. And he, like, I forget if it was, like, it evolved. I remember there's a scene where to figure out how smart people are, like, to get a job or something, like, you go in, it's like a very socialist way to get a job. They test you, and then they just, like, appoint you to a job or something like that. You can tell me if I'm wrong, but don't, not yet. So he goes into this place, and I don't remember if he has a mission at all. Don't remember anything about it. But he goes into this place, and he's, like, putting, like, square pegs into a square hole and a round peg into a round hole, and he's the only one that can do that. And they're like, oh, my God, you're a genius. And so they task him, like, President Camacho, who's like this wrestler, this famous wrestler guy, he tasks him to figure out the why the crops are dying, because they feed them, like, soda.
It's a Gatorade substance that's got electrolytes.
Okay. So then Luke Wilson's like, oh, okay, well, yeah, you just give him water. And they're like, what, water? You mean like out of the toilet? And he's like, yeah. And so then they go, well, why? And he's like, why? Well, because, you know, they need the water because I can't really explain it. The plants just told me. And they're like, oh, okay, the plants told him. Well, that makes sense. Okay, let's put water on him. And I guess that's the entire plot of the movie, is him figuring out that they need to put water. Although I remember a scene like down in New Mexico with like a dinosaur and some other things. I think that's where the crops are. And then there's a scene, I think at the end, at the White House, where President Camacho tells Luke Wilson that he's like needs to do something, or he wants him to be president or vice president or the next president. I don't know, how did I do, Daniel? That's my memory of the movie.
Yeah, pretty solid. Pretty solid there.
Did I crush it? I nailed it?
You know, it's been a while. But, yeah, so he's an Army dude, and they choose him because he's the most average of the average. And it was supposed to be a one-year freezing experiment, and he has no other family or anything like that, so he's, like, the prime person to put in. And they also get this prostitute off the street and make her also do this thing. And shortly after they are frozen, the government program gets shut down because of, like, budget cuts or whatever, and totally forgotten about. And so then flash forwards 500 years into the future where his pod somehow gets activated and he gets released. But in the meantime, this devolution or this dumbing down has occurred because the smarter people had decided to stop breeding because they were waiting until the right time, until they had enough, you know, their jobs were squared away, they had enough money, they were prepared to have children, versus the trailer trash style folks who were just like having kids left and right. And so that just perpetuated their gene pool versus the intelligent folks who weren't having kids anymore. So they got crowded out. And so it devolved the intelligence quotient of the entire population over time.
So this is like a kind of a reverse Darwinism a little bit, in that it's kind of Darwinism, but it kind of not, because here you have a group of people that are being very successful genetically simply by reproducing a great deal, but ultimately they're unsuccessful. And that they're so dumb they don't even know how to take care of themselves.
Yeah, so it's a bit far-fetched because, like, you know, they're pouring Gatorade on the crops and not growing any crops, so, like, how are they getting Gatorade and how are they able to sustain any level of a population?
Right.
But, you know, it's a story. It was in the script.
Right. It was in the script.
Yeah. And it's a Mike Judge movie, Office Space, which is also
Beavis
a great
Butthead.
Film.
Yep.
Beavis and Butthead. And actually,
Beavis
a lot of guys in Office Space are in this movie, which I didn't realize until watching it again recently. Like David Herman, the guy who played Michael Bolton in Office Space, he's in this as one of the cabinet members for Camacho. Stephen Root is in this as a judge. And then there's a few other folks in this that are from the other film.
Nice. I don't remember that at all.
But yeah, essentially he gets put into prison because he refuses, or he's not aware that he needs to have this tattoo on him that's like a barcode. Gets scanned everywhere, like everyone is constantly being scanned wherever they go. So there's a total awareness tracking style thing happening. And how somebody engineered all this, structured all this when the entire population is so dumb and the government is so inept, how a lot of these things exist is a little bit beyond believability even within their little universe here.
Well, because even in this world where there is you could argue that there's a gradual dumbing down of the population, there are still highly intelligent people that are pushing technology forward. But in this idiocracy world, everybody's dumb. So who's even smart enough to maintain the machinery?
Yeah, exactly. Like eventually it would all break down. And perhaps they're using stuff that is a few hundred years old by this time. So stuff that had been invented and has just lasted that long, perhaps.
Right. Yeah, it's not clear.
But he is put into prison because he doesn't have this barcode scanner thing on him, and then he's accused of stealing something because he goes up to this kiosk that is it's like a McDonald's style, like it's a franchise fast food restaurant, and this poor woman has tried to order something and she doesn't have any credits, and so she leaves, and then he goes up to the window and they say that he's trying to steal the food, something like that, I forget exactly, but then because he doesn't have a barcode tattooed on him, they say, he's unregistered. So then they put him in prison. And they first they give him a tattoo. And it's kind of funny because it asks him, the machine giving him the tattoo asks him, like, to state his name, but in a weird way. So he's like, I don't know. And so it says, your name is I don't know. And he goes, what? No. And then it tattoos I don't know on his arm.
Nice.
Because there's some confusion with what the question was and how he answered it.
Right.
But then he gets put into the prison, but everyone is so dumb in the prison that he just shifts the line and goes to the other one and says, oh, I'm supposed to be in the line to get out. And they go, oh, okay, well, go over there then. And then they let him out.
So it wouldn't take much to be a supervillain in this world.
No, not at all. But as part of the imprisoning, they give him that test that you were talking about to see what he's good at. And he's the only one who can put the, you know, square peg in the square hole. And so it turns out later that he is the smartest person alive. And so then he gets invited to the White House to meet with Camacho and the cabinet to try to solve all the problems. And Camacho gives a speech to, like I say, the union style speech. And he gives it in a reverential, like, I don't know how you describe it, but like the black minister style. Like, he's going to cure all the diseases. And he's going to fix all the crops. And he's going to do it all in 1 week. You know, that kind of thing.
No, that's a really good imitation.
Trigger warning, again, post hoc. So he's immediately brought into the cabinet as a secretary of something to solve all these problems, and he finds out that, yeah, they're putting this Gatorade on the crops, and the crops aren't growing, and they say, well, it's got electrolytes, which is kind of the running gag going into this. And because he says that they need to put water on it, then the stock for that Gatorade-style company drops to, like, nothing, and millions of people lose their jobs, and they all blame him for disrupting the economy, you know, however much of an economy there is. And then they don't see the immediate results of the crops growing. So they sentence him to death in this gladiatorial style car, like monster truck thing, like rally, whatever. So he's in this like beat up Yugo that barely moves, and he's like chained to this giant ball, and they throw the giant ball, like this iron ball, on the back of the Yugo, and he's trying to putter along, and there's these two big monster trucks that are going to smash him. And he outwits them, and the monster trucks crash into each other. And so then they bring out Bean Supreme, who is one of the other Wilson brothers. He's the lesser-known Wilson brother, so it's not Luke or Owen. It's the other one. And
there's
his monster truck...
Wilson brother?
Yeah, there's a third Wilson brother, and he's in this movie.
Okay.
But his monster truck is so big...
Spoiler alert, there's a third Wilson brother.
Oh, man. You know, if you haven't seen this movie by now, you know. But his truck is so big that he can't even get in the stadium. So he tries to get through the tunnel, and it collapses on his vehicle and gets destroyed. Because, you know, they're so dumb, right? They can't figure out that they have to make the tunnel big enough or the vehicle small enough, you know, like,
right,
to fit into the hole. Yeah. But anyway, he gets out of his vehicle and starts chasing Luke Wilson down with, like, a flamethrower or something. And meanwhile, the real dumb guy that discovered Luke Wilson has been tasked with going out to the crops to get live video because the crops are actually growing. The prostitute has seen some of the crops growing, and so they start displaying that the crops are growing so that he's actually a hero.
Mm. And that's
pretty much the end of the movie. You know, in watching it again, it's like one of those 90-minute deals, so it's, you know, just long enough to be a theater release.
Yeah.
And when you watch it, you feel like, maybe there wasn't a whole lot of a story there, but it certainly implies a lot. And I think people use this movie to view, they relate it to present day or 10 years ago present day to say, you know, oh, George W. Bush was, you know, he's like the dumbest president ever. And, of course, now everyone thinks Donald Trump's dumber. But they likened it to a biography or a future biography of, you know, how we're going to get worse and worse and devolve. And things are going to get more and more terrible as we move forward. And it's sort of a leftist, elitist viewpoint on the world, I think.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, and, you know, with Camacho being this wrestling star, reality TV star, people are drawing a lot of parallels today to Trump, who, of course, was a celebrity apprentice reality TV star.
Now, what do you think about that? What do you think about Camacho in the movie? Because I remember there's an image of Camacho in the movie. He's, like, giving some speech or whatever. He's had some function, some making some appearance. And he's got like a machine gun, like draped in bullets or something. Is that true that happened in the movie?
Yeah, that's during the, I think that State of the Union style speech, and some people in the front row are heckling him, and so he starts firing the gun off to silence them. And I think it's a play on the redneck, dumbed down, trailer trash devolution that has occurred. So now that becomes a normal way of speaking or manner of behaving.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of the other things that they say with Luke Wilson, whenever he tries to talk to anyone, they say, "Why are you talking so faggy? Why are you doing all this fag talk?" You know, because he speaks like normal, where everyone else does this sort of half drawl kind of blend of made up words.
Mm. Well, all words are made up, so I'm sure. Yeah, if you go a couple hundred years in the future, language will be vastly different than what it is now.
Yeah, I mean, just go back and look at some Shakespeare. I mean, no one can even understand it.
Yeah.
Or even try to read Ludwig von Mises. I mean, he uses some pretty intense language where when I was reading some of his work, I had to look up so many words. And I don't feel like I'm a dumb guy. I mean, you know, your mileage may vary. Your opinion may vary. But when I was reading some of that, some of his work for that one-year Austrian course I did,
mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, my God, this guy, man, I can't believe he, like, knew this stuff to say this stuff to, you know, because it was brilliant work once I understood what he was saying.
Yeah.
But, you know, even in that 100 years, things have changed so much. So imagine
massively,
500 years in the future.
Yeah, and he was a brilliant guy. But even among less brilliant authors, I think the language has changed greatly. So that you read a book from 100 years ago, and you're going to get all kinds of strange-sounding words or uses of words. Just that, you know, just the language has changed, and we've moved on. Certain words have fallen out of favor, and other words have gained favor.
And I think in some ways we have devolved. Like, the words are more simplistic. And dumber in a way.
Well, I think you're actually conveying more information with less effort.
Yeah, that may be true.
So you contract a lot of words. You use a slur to actually say an entire sentence with just like a few syllables. You could easily do that.
Yeah, I think that was one of the complaints from the left was that Trump speaks at a seventh or eighth grade level, and he's like speaking to the lowest common denominator in a very brutish fashion that is beneath the Democrats. So,
well, that's what the news does.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, the fake news.
Well, I mean, they're all newspapers are written at like a fourth grade level. How can that be a criticism against the guy? That's ridiculous. Everybody, when they're speaking publicly, I mean, unless you're actually, I mean, nobody goes out there trying to talk like Peter Joseph. I don't think anybody would vote for that guy. Maybe a few.
Well, I think a lot of politicians maybe intend to speak at a lower level, but some of them aren't so good at it. Like, I think Clinton wasn't so good at it. Trump was good at it. Like, people could relate to him.
Mm-hmm.
And Clinton just wasn't good at it. She was robotic, and I think used some language that maybe college-educated folks would feel good about themselves in a, you know, masturbatory fashion, like, oh, I know what that means. Ha, 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 I'm so great. Whereas Trump is, like, speaking more on the gut check level. And that resonates with people who try to look through all the bullshit. Because, I mean, the whole political process is bullshit. You know, it's
absolutely.
Like,
and it's also a lot of condescending talking down to, especially in the media, when they're trying to tell you what you should think and what is actually true and where everybody else is just too dumb to get it. That was a big criticism labeled against basically your average Trump voter, is that they're just so stupid.
Right, and it really demonstrates the ignorance of the people making that claim, because once you sort of understand the struggle between government power and individual choice, you're going to line up more on the conservative side, right? The Trump-ish side, even though he is a devout interventionist. I mean, I don't pretend for a second that he's not also a closet socialist, just not as overt as Clinton or Sanders.
He's absolutely a socialist. He is just less of one than Clinton. He'll talk about out of both sides of his mouth, just like your average politician. Well, on the one hand, he'll say how he's so pro-business, and then another time he'll talk about, oh, we need to institute all these tariffs. Bullshit. It's like, what? Okay. We need to create trade deals, but then we're just going to embargo and create massive tariffs and whatever. Anyway, go ahead.
But the rhetoric is centered around a more individualistic approach to things, which the left views as stupid or old-fashioned or just uneducated, when the reality is that it's actually a more advanced understanding of how progress happens. know, the less involved the government is, the better off things are.
Correct.
The more voluntary choices are allowed to be made, the more hands-off things are, the more progress happens, the more that the standard of living is improved. But the leftists view that as stupid and Neanderthal.
Correct, because they see central control of a technocracy of the smart, of the elite, of the smartest of the smart who actually know things to tell everybody else how to do things and what to do.
Right, which is the Hayekian fatal conceit, right? They think they know enough about something to know enough about everything, and they don't take into account the tacit knowledge that each individual brings to each situation that they encounter, and there's millions and millions and millions of situations every day that everyone deals with and makes their own choices, and that's what actually creates progress.
Correct.
And there's no way for the central planner to know all of that, no matter how many scientists and supercomputers they have.
Correct.
To, you know, circumvent the Oscar Longa argument that, oh, we just need a fast enough computer and we'll figure all this out. Or the Peter Joseph argument, and he's pretty much the same fucking thing.
And even then, even if that were true, even if we did have perfect knowledge, it's still immoral. You're still saying someone that has to do a thing at the point of a gun. You're
right,
not giving suggestions with government. You're making laws. You're
and
forcing
think about
people
it.
To do a thing. Even if it's the best thing, you're not allowed to make your own mistakes. Go fuck yourself.
Right, and think about it. They're going through all this effort to create supercomputers that can dictate, you know, everyone's needs and wants and desires and how best to allocate resources to match that, which is, in essence, trying to replicate a market when they could just get the fuck out of the way and that shit happens naturally.
Yeah, you just don't have to do it. It's already happening.
Why spend all this effort to get into position to not even come close to being as good as what the market can do? Like, I don't understand the argument. You know, like, oh, well, we can figure it out with supercomputers. Well, but or even if that were true, and it's not, why would you? Because you don't need to, because
it's already happening.
It's already happening, exactly.
Yeah, it already exists. You just need to get out of the way. Yeah. But, you know, you're a central planner, you're a control freak. You're not going to give up your power. That's your job in society, is to suck off the others, the productive. You're a looter, Daniel. Come on.
Well, yeah, you're getting all Randian. I did see an article the other day, and I don't know if this is going to be labeled as fake news or not, but that Trump was labeled as a Randian in the Washington Post. Trump was labeled a Randian, and that he's appointing all these objectivists to his cabinet.
Right. Objectivists. All these people in Goldman Sachs and all these defense contractors.
Yeah, and all these military generals who are like, you know, whenever you go into a room, just make sure you have a plan to kill everyone there.
That sounds Randian.
Yeah, maybe. I mean,
well, he did believe in covering with the defense, but other than that, yeah.
But I think that was a Mattis quote, and I think he's in the running to be in the cabinet if he's not already in it. Mad Dog Mattis.
Do you think that that's a? It seems to be a misunderstanding all the way across the board of what a Randian is versus what Trump is.
Of course. I mean, I think just because he is a businessman. And that Rand pushed that business was better than government, and there was looters and producers.
Right.
That they're lumping him in on a very general level, like a fourth grade level, ironically enough. That really doesn't hold true in any respect, in any objective analysis. And I use that word advisedly. So it truly is fake news, and yet now we're seeing all these stories about Clinton is claiming that Russia hacked the emails and that all this fake news contributed to her not winning. So now Facebook is saying, oh, we're going to institute a program to, like, flag and then vet news that is flagged by users.
Right.
What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's interesting in that there's a here's an article from the New York Times about Facebook fake news. And it's titled, Facebook Mounts Effort to Limit Tide of Fake News. And it's claiming, here in this article, I'll read this sentence here. But as its reach and influence have grown, talking about Facebook, it has had to confront questions about its moral obligations and ethical standards regarding what appears on the network. And we've talked about platforms in the past. If you create a thing that other people use, you have no obligation to censor or to control, to remove, delete. If you want to, you can. But to say that Facebook is somehow responsible for what everybody on the planet does is hilarious. Saying that it has some sort of a moral obligation, like back when it wasn't so popular, when it didn't influence elections supposedly, then it doesn't have a moral obligation. But now that Trump has been elected, Now that Hillary Clinton has lost and Facebook is somehow responsible for that, now it has a moral obligation regarding what appears on its website. So, of course it doesn't. If you create a thing, you are under no moral obligation to control what your users do or do not do. I don't really have a whole lot else to say about it. It's there seems to be this big call blaming, mostly coming from like Hillary Clinton and Clinton supporters, blaming this nebulous thing called fake news. And you mentioned earlier that there was one news article about how the Pope had supported or endorsed Trump and how that was fake. Of course, it's not a news story that there is true things on the internet and false things on the internet. These are all subject to market forces. If you see a number of things you see as false on a particular site or coming from a particular source, you're less likely to trust that source.
Which is why belief in mainstream media is an all-time low. It's
yeah.
why MSNBC, CNN, NBC, ABC, CBS, CNN, Washington Post, New York Times are all going down the shitter.
They've all been caught repeatedly falsifying news or creating fake news or whatever.
But of course, they're not going to get flagged as fake news now. This whole
correct.
Effort to police the news is from a left-leaning stance that is pro-mainstream media,
it
anti-anything
right.
that questions the establishment. Anything
right.
controversial is going to get flagged in this situation. And they're going to escalate it to this Snopes and some other outfit that are going to vet the veracity of the information. And, of course, even those are left-leaning, like the PolitiFact, I think, is one of the other ones, where they'll change how they view something based on who said it, you know? Like, there are tons of examples. I saw a bunch of memes about the same topic, but uttered by Clinton, you know, a year or two before, and they said, oh, yeah, mostly true or true. But they, Trump said the exact same thing, just slightly differently, and they go, oh, pants on fire, liar.
Yeah. But it seems to be, like you mentioned, it really seems to be that the mainstream media is circling its wagons. It's realized that it's facing a serious threat with competition. And this is them saying, hey, we're the ones you can trust, even though we've been caught lying numerous times.
And it shows in their numbers. I mean, no one watches that stuff anymore.
Well, yeah.
I don't want to say no one. I mean, very few. A lot fewer people watch that stuff than have in the past.
Right. And what they're really afraid of is choice. You have a massive amount of choice on the internet from where you want to get your news and your whatevers, citizen journalists and other news sources that don't belong to the giant mainstream media fall under that umbrella. And people are going to those news sources more and more, and yeah, you're losing market share, so you're going to denounce your enemy, saying that they're fake and that they're true, and they actually, you know, vet their sources and fact-check their news stories, whereas other people supposedly don't.
Yeah, meanwhile, the New York Times straight up lied about everything about the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, got us into war,
yep.
and yet they're still on the white list of not fake news. And
yep.
this is admitted, you know, in the Duke LaCrosse story and, you know, a dozen other stories that I can't quite recall at the moment, but I'm sure a quick Google search will find them for you. But how many fake news things are in the mainstream media? And I would say it's the majority of them, honestly, because it all depends on the perspective in which you're reading them. Many of them.
Well, a lot of the mainstream news is just a lot of White House soundboard.
Yeah, it's exactly. They just report on what's been in the press release.
Yeah. I mean, how is that investigative reporting? That's just, yeah, I'm going to retype what this White House press release said. How is that truth checking? I mean, the White House are known liars. Politicians are known, established liars. So,
that's how they get into office. Who lies the best? You know, who's the most convincing liar gets into the office.
Right, and then you got people out in the fringe currently in the underground that are actually saying things that are different, and they're being screened at as being fake news.
Yeah, or racist or bigots or stupid or, you know, you name it. And it's all name-calling.
Yeah.
You know, it's nothing about the arguments. It's nothing about what's actually presented. It's, oh, you're not a mainstream thing. You're not a an established, what's Tom Woods called, the 3x5 card of
allowable
opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not on this 3x5 card. So whatever you say is automatically wrong. It's like
if you're a white old man.
Yeah, you're an old man. You're a fucking white male. Therefore, you are wrong.
Yep.
Therefore, you are wrong because you are a white male.
You get shouted down. You get discredited just because of...
And called a racist.
Yeah, just because
you're
not
shit,
with us.
Terrible person.
You're the other. You're the competition. Therefore, what you're saying cannot possibly be true. It's, and I think a lot of people are, obviously, by the election results and other, in my own opinion, your own opinion, I think, is people are catching on, and I don't think it's necessarily flying. I mean, they don't lie about everything. Of course, they can't. They shouldn't be really good at lying. You don't lie all the time. You got to tell the truth a fair amount of time, too, so you can mix those lies in with it, and it seem like truth. So they have a certain amount of credibility, but it is slipping, and hopefully as the lies and the reputation goes down the tank, we can move past this, and actually they'll be incentivized to actually tell the truth and not just be White House sounding boards.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see the evolution of this entire process, because, I mean, go down memory lane with me here, but I remember when I was investigating colleges, you went with me to Washington State University, and we sat in on a lecture about the deregulation of news organizations in markets. So it used to be that only a certain number of ownership groups could exist in any given market.
And yeah.
I might be wrong on this, but in 1995 or 6, it changed to where now anyone could own anything anywhere or could own multiple news organizations in multiple markets. And so they were saying that this was going to lead to a consolidation and roll up to where our opinions are going to be formulated by only, you know, a handful
right.
of super large media organizations. And to some extent, that's true. How that's any different than, you know, 50 years ago when there was a government-enforced monopoly on ABC, NBC, CBS, and that was where everyone got their information, or, you know, New York Times, Chicago Tribune, and the LA Times, San Francisco Chronicle. I mean, it was so much easier for the government to control what was presented in the news 50 years ago versus now. But
right.
this was presented as this, like, terrible thing. Like, oh, they're going to open up this thing, deregulate it, and then now it's going to all, you know, get through acquisitions and mergers. We're going to get forced to only get our news from a handful of locations, or a handful of opinions. And, of course, Fox News was demonized as being conservative, Republican, unfeeling, uncaring, lying, stupid, you know, et cetera.
Right. Lowest common denominator.
Yeah, of course. And yet everything else is like totally left-leaning. And even Fox News, as conservative as they appear, they're also pretty much closet socialists. You know, if you really break it down, like if you're talking about advancement of government control over things or not, maybe they're a little bit less than MSNBC and CNN, but not by much. And certainly not by my standard, which is maximum freedom.
Right. Now, they do have a few good, actually good shows on television. They've got Kennedy, and they've got Judge Andrew Napolitano, and they've got Stossel. So they've got a few people on there that are fairly libertarian. Especially,
I'm going to throw one more at
Napolitano.
You.
Napolitano is actually an anarchist. And Kennedy, she's actually had Dave Smith on several times. What else? What else you got, Danny?
Tucker Carlson. He is, he's been around the media game for 20, 30 years now, and he still looks super young. Yeah, he looks super young still. But now he's got a show. And there's all these compilations on YouTube, You Can't Cuck the Tuck, and he's laying into people, and he's coming from a very free markety approach. He's been on Alex Jones like 2 or 3 years ago, and was talking about, you know, liberty and freedom, and now he's got a show. It's been on for maybe a month, and there's all these compilations from it, and one of them, he had the congressional, like, head of the intelligence community who was on, and he was giving an interview about how, oh, we have conclusive evidence that Russian hackers were involved in the elections, and Tucker was like, no, turn to the camera and say, we have specific incredible evidence that says that the Podesta emails were the result of Russian hackers. And the guy went back to his, you know, tagline statement and said, we have evidence that Russians were involved in the election process. And he's like, no, you're hiding behind weasel words here. I want you to say explicitly that you have actual credible evidence that the Podesta emails were a result. Which is, of course, the story, right? That's the narrative that's out there.
Yeah.
And they're all saying things around it to make it appear as if, yes, that is true, but there is no actual evidence, and so Tucker calls him out on it. He's like, see, you're not going to say it. You're not going to say it because it's not true. So I'm kind of a fan of that guy. If you haven't checked him out, check him out. Tucker Carlson.
Well, I remember him from decades ago. Like you said, he's been around a long time. Back when I used to watch, like, you know, I was a lefty liberal guy. And I
He's got a cherubic face. He looks very young.
Well, I remember, you know, they would just skewer him and Coulter a lot on The Daily Show. And I used to think, you know, Coulter and Carlson are pretty garbage people. And I'm still not a fan of Coulter. But that's interesting that he's got this kind of information. Maybe he's been hanging around good people. I don't know.
Yeah, well, check out some of the compilations. I'll send them to you. I mean, it's sort of like watching Milo Yiannopoulos or Ben Shapiro. Like, they're really good on SJW stuff,
right.
But they're really bad on the neocon or the, you know, they're still statists.
Right.
They're just, you know, really good at tearing apart some of the SJW tiers.
Right, yeah. Actually, if you haven't listened to it, I want to say the best episode of Freedom Main Radio that I've heard in probably ever was the Milo Yiannopoulos episode. That was a couple weeks ago. Ever since Steph has gone down this Trump road, it's been kind of gross. And lately, once he got elected, he did this back-slapping episode where he was just congratulating himself and everybody else on a job well done and how they averted World War III and how wonderful they are and how awesome everything's going to be under Trump. And then there was a really gross episode where they were talking about the Trump cabinet picks and how Trump is just smarter than everybody else and that you just have to wait and see. You don't know that these people are going to be bad. The guy named Mad Dog, he's probably a good person. And you're just wrong to have concerns and you're dumb. And wait and see. And then once he's in office, then you can criticize him, but don't criticize him yet. And I was just like, what? This does not sound like a principled approach at all. But okay.
Yeah, these people didn't just drop out of the sky. They existed and have done things in the past that gives you a window into the type of person they are. And you can certainly criticize their past actions.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was just really condescending. It was basically telling everybody to sit back and relax and not worry about things because Trump's just, you know, a super awesome guy and he's only doing good things and wait till later on when he actually does something before you criticize him. Well, he's actually doing things right now. He is actually appointing these people. That is a thing he's doing. When he's filling his cabinet full of neocons, that is a thing. When he's filling his cabinet full of Goldman Sachs and Wall Street people, that is a thing he is doing. That is a message that he's sending to people.
That's
saying
true.
That that's not nothing to be concerned about is ridiculous.
You know, I think that I could say it's not something to be concerned about in this light, in that we had bad choice A and bad choice B, and either one's going to happen, and whatever they do is going to happen, and what you can do to avert that is virtually nothing, so why worry about it?
True. True. Worrying is really not going to do anything, of course, but to say that things are going to be fine because Trump is smart and he'll pick the best people, and they're not going to do bad things because wait and see if they're going to do bad things. I can predict right now that they're going to do bad things.
Yeah.
It doesn't take a genius. That's what government does.
You know what's beautiful about this is the left is whining about all of the cabinet picks, and they're calling Steve Bannon a racist and saying he's a white supremacist. And as far as I've been able to see, none of that's true, and that's the narrative in the mainstream media. So why is that not labeled fake news?
Because it's mainstream media.
I mean, they call the guy an anti-Semite, and I think he's Jewish or something. I mean, or he had a bunch of Jewish people working for him at Breitbart. Like, there's a whole bunch of evidence to the contrary of the claims that just make them ridiculous. And yet
that's the
talking head point is, you know, he's a white supremacist, racist asshole, and he's going to be in charge of, you know, X, Y, and Z in the Trump cabinet.
Yeah, it's really just the mainstream media is doubling down. They're not accepting and admitting their fault. They're not learning the lessons that need to be learned. They're just continuing on with their tactics, their attack tactics.
Which have been failing them. And that's what's kind of beautiful to see is that they don't figure it out and change course. I mean, they're not even trying to come up with an alternate game plan. I think they know they're in trouble and they're scrambling, but they can't see past what they've always done.
Right. Well, they're, you know, it's a big, giant ship, and it takes a while to steer it.
They're the literal dinosaur.
They are. They are the dinosaur. It took them forever to get on the internet to make, you know, business models that work on the internet. They still have, you know, magazine publications. You know, they still do all that kind of stuff. They still make newspapers. They are the slow-moving ship. It's hard to turn. They're the Titanic. And it's interesting whether they're going to hit the iceberg or they're not. I don't know. But
I think they already have. I think they're done. I think they're sinking, and they're going to go down with the ship. And Trump plays them like a fiddle. I think he knows how to do it, how to antagonize them, how to make them play into his hand.
Well, and it's funny that was one of the main things he ran on, was that don't listen to the mainstream media, they're a bunch of liars. That was one of the main talking points that he would use. And he got elected. So, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the congressional approval rating is lower, but mainstream media is not far behind.
Yeah,
I mean, you're talking about you're in the aughts, you're in the single digits temperature-wise. I think both of them are single digits credibility-wise. And yet they're the ones who are going to be determining what is fake news and what is not. I mean, who better to ask than the experts, right?
Right. Who better the ones that have a vested interest in pointing out that other people are fake news and not them?
Yeah, they are the fake news experts for sure.
Yeah, it's super cool. Let's get back to Idiocracy and let's get to some more kind of general questions. Although I've been enjoying our conversation so far. The main kind of point of the movie, I guess you could say, is that we're kind of getting stupider. I mean, do you see this as a true thing? Do you see it's definitely true that people are waiting longer, you know, more of the educated white whatever, or just the educated affluent people are generally
waiting.
How
dare you racist?
I am a racist. I'm a white man. Of course I'm racist.
By default, not through anything you think or say.
Right. By existing. That people are waiting longer to have children. I mean, you didn't have children until you were in your like early to mid-30s. I still don't, and I just hit 40.
Yeah, you want them.
Yes, it's true. But I don't think we're alone. I think a lot of people waited. I definitely think the movie was saying something that was, you know, at least partially true. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think there's a fair amount of that, and I think part of it is due to government interventions in the past, like the whole poverty programs, anti-poverty programs that actually prolong poverty. When you listen to, like, say that?
When you get rewarded for having children?
Exactly, yeah. So you listen to Thomas Sowell or Walter Williams on these topics, but the whole welfare state basically says that the more kids you have, the more money you'll get.
And the lower your income.
Yeah, the lower your income, the more benefits you'll get. Yeah, and the more that the father is around, the less you'll get. Therefore, there's an incentive to not have the father around. And then, you know, 20, 30 years later, you got all these unwed, single mothers with a bunch of kids.
Yep.
That's the result.
Absolutely. Now, that's not to say that they're stupid, but you're talking about all kinds of other problems.
Oh, certainly. And you talked about that before the show, we were talking about trap music. And you gave me a description of it, I can't quite remember, but... it was basically because getting into the drug trade, you were sort of trapped into that. And it's a result of two things, primarily. One is the welfare state, where we talk about, you know, single mothers with a bunch of kids. And then you've got the economic interventions like minimum wages and other employment and workplace rules and regulations that prevent employers from employing as many people as they would like at the prices that they would prefer to pay. Therefore, those who are less skilled or less inclined to, you know, start or work for a lower wage or anything like that won't even be able to get a job. And so I actually said that wrong. They're not less inclined to work for less. They are legally prohibited from working for less. So their advantage in the workplace is taken away from them.
Add into that the drug war and the lucrative nature of the illegality of drugs.
Right, yeah. So it's basically threefold, right? Economic regulations, wage controls, regulations on jobs, it's the welfare state, and it's the drug war. Those three things contribute to essentially forcing people to be trapped into a lifestyle that is very difficult to get out of. Trigger warning.
Yeah, buddy. Now, there have been, sure, there are studies, but there are also government statistics and those sort of reports about... I don't know if I don't think that there are IQ reports put out by the government. I could be wrong about that. But certainly government publishes its numbers on test scores and that sorts of things.
There's all sorts of state standardized testing. I know when I was in school, there were a handful of them that I had to do. And as well, there were IQ tests that segregated the classes I was in. So I was in the, you know, high-level classes based on those tests.
Hmm.
And, you know, that's all government schools, right? So I'm sure that all gets rolled up in some inefficient fashion.
Right. But how can you trust a monopoly to tell you anything, really? They don't have any kind of competition in as far as anything. So when you're forced to pay for a thing, and they're going to get paid regardless, there's really no incentive to make the best possible reporting of anything. So how can we really trust any of this data coming out of how smart we are from government schools? I just don't see it.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, there's a whole bunch of stuff to vet on or talk about on this. But I remember back when I was in school that people would say, well, IQ isn't the best measure. SAT isn't the best measure. There's all sorts of different ways that people learn and exhibit what they have learned. And that seems to have fallen by the wayside. It seems like that a lot of the things that seem to be what the left was about 20, 30 years ago has gone away. You know, they used to be against standardized testing, and now they're for it. They used to be against the wars, now they're for them. They used to be thinking that people had, you know, different ways of learning, and now they're like, oh, Common Core is the way to go. Public schools just need to be more funded, better funded, and things will work out. Education is a right. We need to pay for people to go all the way through college and beyond. There needs to be, you know, maternity leave.
Didn't Obama say that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He says all sorts of stupid shit.
Yeah. That's just hilarious when he came out and said that everybody should be able to go to college for free or something like that. It's like, you admit that for the first 12 years, you didn't do a good enough job in order to prepare people for the workplace. So you're going to give them another 4 years. And then, not to even talk about how, if everybody goes to college, how much that devalues the college education degree.
Yeah, and what's the quality of the college education degree going to be when there's this artificial demand for additional services provided, and therefore they are lesser in their capability of providing said services?
Yeah.
So it is going to be the idiocracy dumbing down. And I feel like in a way that's kind of already happened. Like a college degree today doesn't mean nearly as much to an employer as it did 20 years ago.
Right, when far fewer people actually went. Absolutely.
Right, and then there's all these like, oh, my social gender studies degree, I should be able to get that degree and $100,000 in debt and get a good job. That's sort of this entitlement thought process that goes into these people who go to school and then bitch and complain about how, well, I'm a social worker and I make $25,000 a year. And I owe
$100,000. I'm not getting paid as much as these male engineering students.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't make any sense, you know. It's this drive towards this egalitarian situation where everyone expects equal outcomes based on no matter what amount of effort is put in or what amount of talent exists that can be honed. It doesn't matter how hard you've worked on anything. You can expect the same outcome. This entitlement ideal, and it's essentially...
Cupcake generation, man. It's where everybody gets a participation trophy.
Right, yeah, exactly. And when you and I were growing up, we saw this. Like, people were getting trophies for everything, just for being there. And it certainly doesn't incentivize you to work any harder if all you had to do was show up.
Yeah.
And Woods actually talks about this in some of his emails where he says, you know, most people don't even put in the work now. So, you know, you're at an advantage if you do the work. Because no one does anything. Everyone's, like, watching shows or playing video games. You know, so if you're actually out there putting together effort, it will be discovered and you'll come out ahead. So it actually takes a lot less effort today than it used to. And a lot of that's due to advancements in technology, but another part of it is because there's this victim mentality where the person who can exhibit themselves as the biggest victim is expected to receive the most benefits.
Indeed. Like me without my hot water.
Yeah, you have a human right to hot water, Robert.
I'm a victim, even though it was of my own devising. I'm a victim of the weather, therefore I need it. So
well, you are a white male, so you get no credits, no tokens of victimhood.
I don't understand the rules. These rules are constantly changing. If you're a minority, you can't be racist. If you're not a minority, you're automatically racist. It removes any meaning out of the word.
You know, my wife's in all these baby-wearing groups because that's a thing, you know, like wearing your baby, and it's actually really good for the kid and for you. You create a bond, and it allows you to do a bunch of other stuff around the house because you got two arms free, et cetera. But there's all these groups on Facebook, and a bunch of them are like baby wearers of color or, you know, whatever, like certain segmentations and breakdowns of different groups of people who self-identify in some way to where if you or I or my wife did something remotely similar, they would get shouted down and shut down because they'd be racist. Like, imagine if my wife made a white baby wearers group.
Oh, yeah.
We wear white babies.
Yep.
Yeah, how long is that?
Horrible racism. Horrible racism. But when it's like, we wear black babies, totally fine.
Yeah. And then now there's all this shit about, apparently there's a bunch of different companies that make these baby wraps, and some of them have patterns and names that are, you know, origined in other countries. Like, there's Peruvian patterns, there's Greek names, there's, you know, fabrics from Micronesia, whatever. The companies are getting social network-y in trouble because they're insensitive to the cultures they are appropriating. So they're being told they need to change their materials, they need to change the names of their wraps, they need to change the designs.
This is the PC police?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, one of them is called Didymos, which is like a German company, but it's sort of a Greek-ish name, and apparently even that is getting them in trouble.
Now, is this a voluntary thing, or is this a coercive thing? Are they saying we're going to boycott your product unless you change, or are we saying you have to change or else you're going to be fined or whatever?
Yeah, I don't know if there's any legal action per se. So it may just be the actual idiocracy involved, actual stupid people ganging together to make a voluntary boycott of something in a stupid attempt to, you know, shout down and shut down perceived violations of some moral code that doesn't actually exist about cultural appropriation, etc.
They couldn't define if they had a gun to their head. They still couldn't do it.
It would be constantly changing.
Yeah, well, it's nebulous and makes no sense to begin with, so how could you even define it?
But yeah, I see your point you're making, is that if it's voluntary, then fine. And yes, I agree, and it's similar to, you know, Facebook policing fake news. It's a private network, so yeah, they can do what they want. But it doesn't mean, as libertarians and as anarchists, that we can't criticize the decisions being made.
Sure. Absolutely. We just don't have the right to put a gun to their head and tell them to stop doing it.
Right, yeah. So we can say, well, it is voluntary, but it's stupid.
Sure. And we have every right to tell them it's stupid, because it is. Now, Daniel, I have a question about this movie that you watched, Idiocracy movie. Because one of the topics that was raised in kind of discussing of it on this Wikipedia article I was reading was that it kind of touched on eugenics. So did you see anything in the movie that was kind of about eugenics? Because the history of eugenics is long and torrid and horrific, and we could talk about that a little bit. But was there anything in the movie that really kind of brought that up in your mind?
In sort of maybe a reverse way, because eugenics is supposed to, like, cull the undesirable.
Well, there's positive eugenics and there's negative eugenics. Negative eugenics where you would, exactly what you said, cull the undesirable, go out and murder or sterilize people, like what happened in the early 20th century in the United States.
The founder of Planned Parenthood was all about that, Margaret Sanger. It used to be called something else. It was actually like the American Eugenic Society, right?
Sure, yeah. Before it got negative publicity from World War II and Hitler, it was all the rage among the intellectual elite in the United States.
Yeah, they were all about phrenology, and if you had certain skull patterns, and if you were retarded.
If you had an IQ of a certain number, you were forcibly sterilized.
Yeah, they would force sterilize people in institutions, or even not in institutions, if I recall. Like, if you had an IQ below a certain threshold, they would forcibly sterilize you against your will.
There are stories of sheriffs out in the Appalachian Mountains just driving out into the sticks and just rounding up people at their homes and kidnapping them and then taking them places and then injecting them with sterilants. Terrific.
Yeah, and of course, you know, Planned Parenthood is this, like, deified organization today.
Especially among the left, you still think that there's a massive population problem. But they obviously don't think it enough to kill themselves, but they think it's a real problem.
Yeah, and you know what's beautiful about, this is a bit of an irony, but the left believes that the government is the only method by which large-scale projects or things that need to be funded collectively can be funded. It needs to be through government and through collective forced action. Yet, in response to Trump being elected, all sorts of donations are being made to Planned Parenthood in the name of Mike Pence, the VP-elect, thus proving the point that it does not take coercion to fund large-scale projects.
Right. Have you seen, speaking of the crazy people reacting to Trump, have you seen all the scientists who are, like, working diligently to back up and whatever, all their data, because they think Trump's going to come in and just delete a bunch of data, all their science or their weather data or whatever they're working on?
Wait. So they're going to back up what they previously destroyed and altered?
Well, yeah.
To attempt to prove something that's actually not happening?
Yeah, I just kind of skimmed the articles, but there are a bunch of people, especially a bunch of scientists, who see Trump as this, you know, Hitler, actual Hitler, who's going to come in and who's so anti-science that he is going to, you know, destroy all their data. So they're I think some people, like, moved a bunch of data over to Canada to get it away from him. Does anyone else think this is hilarious? They think it's real. They think that this is, like, going to be some Nazi-style purge of, you know, killing the intellectuals or destroying the data that, you know, is against what he views. So, which I guess, you know, governments have done that in the past, which I suppose, take whatever measures you need and deem necessary. But I just don't see it happening. I don't see the guy being, oh, there's data or information, even though you've probably manipulated it, that says something other than what I believe. Well, I'm just going to go in there and delete it, just call in the Gestapo and destroy these computers and smash them with hammers. I just don't see it.
Yeah, the funny thing is that's literally what Hillary Clinton did with her private email server and the BlackBerrys associated.
Right.
And I also think it's more likely that she would be that, as president, that type of situation would be more likely to be at issue.
Most likely. If anything, it seems like Trump is more of a skeptic. He doesn't necessarily believe necessarily what he's been told about that sort of thing. Or maybe he's seen information like we have that suggests otherwise. Or that even if it is true and it is irreversible and whatever, even though the climate changes all the time, if it's true that anthropogenic, I can't even say that word right now, human-caused climate change is occurring, that the actual cost to change it or reverse it or reduce it in any way would be so ridiculous that it would just murder people. Literally. I mean, people would actually die due to how much it would cost. It would actually cost money to buy food and put a roof over your head and to buy power. Take that away from people and people will die.
Yeah, that actually brings up a nice segue into a comment on the Tom Woods group, and I won't say who it is from, but he says, my sister just told me she doesn't, quote, give a shit if billions die due to an energy poverty. I'm for the Earth, end quote.
Anti-human, pro-rock. Okay. That's a lot of lefty environmentalist thought right there. Absolutely. A lot of people think there are too many people. Fuck them, those greedy business people, even though greed drives the economy and it's provided all these things for you to use and enjoy all around you, surrounding you all the time, that you prefer, because you obviously don't just live out in a cave. But people are bad and evil, and they need to die. Okay, anti-human.
Yeah, so let's bring it back to the science thing that people were concerned about, where they were bringing their data somewhere else to protect it.
Let me pull it up while you talk. Go ahead.
All right, yeah, so to protect it from a Trump presidency. And, I mean, isn't that ironic that that's essentially what they're doing with this fake news thing? You know, they're basically saying that anything that's controversial is now going to be flagged in such a way to where it's considered to be fake news and thus won't get as much prominence in Facebook. And I think that this is one of the things that is going to drive sow the seeds of the downfall of these types of networks, Facebook and YouTube. You were talking about the YouTube Heroes program before the call, where people can flag videos on there for violating certain nebulous terms that are, you know, pretty left-leaning, in my estimation. And Twitter's already exhibited some of these things by banning accounts of people like Milo and quelling free speech on their platform. And yes, they are private entities, and they can choose to do whatever they wish, but their stock is tanking as a result, and people are going to more and more seek out alternate venues. I mean, just think back 10 years ago. MySpace was a big deal. Facebook was small. Now it's flipped. MySpace barely exists. Facebook's all the rage. But what's going to happen 5-10 years from now? Mm-hmm. You know, especially as they get more draconian in their policing of content.
Certainly. That should drive people away, I would think. You become more and more the man. You become more and more aligned with the system and away from something that is more user-focused. And I think you're going to lose market share, absolutely.
Yeah, and that brings me sort of back to the Idiocracy and the fake news thing, in that the more that things are determined to be fake news, the less likely they're going to show up in a news feed and be presented and be seen. It sort of reinforces this pre-existing echo chamber. Like, so many people were caught off guard by the Trump election on Facebook because Facebook is very the people on there are very left-leaning, and they have friends. Yeah, it's an echo chamber, a socialist echo chamber, just like you said. And so people are friends with like-minded people, and so they only see things that are related to their ideology, or you know, they don't really have one, but their perception of reality. And so that's why a Trump presidency and a Trump victory was so imperceivable to them. Did I even say that right? Like, they didn't see it coming. It was so unforeseen.
Yep.
And adding to that is this fake news thing, and that's only going to compound the problem even more. And then you've got, you know, Hillary Clinton, like, blaming fake news. She's blaming Russia. She's blaming Putin. She's blaming everything around her for
anybody
why she lost.
Anyone but herself.
Yeah, anyone but herself for running a terrible campaign and being a piece of shit.
Right.
And, you know, leaving a trail of dead bodies in her wake and all sorts of questionable events. And the email, you know, the emails were hacked. Sure. Somebody presented emails that weren't intended to be public consumption, but they just go and show the rampant violations of every principle they claim to uphold to. And of course she's going to claim that, you know, she lost because of all these things. And she did in a way, but she's also an unelectable, unlikable piece of crap. And it's not because she's a woman. It's because she's a terrible person.
Yeah, and that message, I think, has been lost, or was lost, I think, by a lot of people, especially on the initial reaction to the election, who saw Trump as the racist white nationalist candidate and Clinton as just woman.
Right, yeah, and somehow it's racist to not vote for the woman, the white government entrenched. Wall Street entrenched woman, white
yeah.
woman, who
yeah.
is the wife of the former president rapist white guy. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, what? Why are they claiming that not voting for that person is racist?
Yep.
Makes no sense.
Of course it doesn't. Mainstream news doesn't actually have to make sense. It's about pushing narratives and ignoring uncomfortable questions that don't fit.
Yeah, so I'm going to add a little bit more. So because this is Friday, this is the last business day before the Electoral College actually commits their votes. I guess it's happening on Monday the 19th. And there's trending on Facebook stories about the Electoral College claiming that, yeah, we've all been thinking that Trump has won, but the actual confirmation doesn't occur until Monday. So don't count your cards just yet. And then Obama's out here saying, well, we will retaliate against Russia for the election hacking.
Yeah.
Like, you have no credible evidence that they actually did anything. And when questioned about the Podesta email specifically, nothing was confirmed. You know, what? It doesn't make any sense. Like,
and even if it was, even if that was all some grand conspiracy to provide information to the voting public, so what? So the information, so people found out that Hillary Clinton was a piece of shit. How is that bad?
Right.
How
and
is
you want
that
to hear
bad
the irony?
To find out more about a candidate?
Here's
no,
the
there's something you shouldn't. You just shouldn't be able to know certain things about a candidate that's going to wield ungodly power. You just shouldn't be able to know. What?
Yeah, and here's the ultimate irony. Quote, I think there is no doubt that when any foreign government tries to impact the integrity of our elections,
integrity.
We need to take action, end quote.
Integrity. As if there was any integrity to begin with.
Well, not only that, but how many foreign interventions have occurred by the government of the United
yeah,
States?
We've propped up and set up so many different governments and regime changes over the decades, it's not even funny. I mean, Iran, what is it, Guatemala, Libya, just to name a few. I mean, there's been dozens.
Well, there's even evidence that the Russian Revolution in 1917 was funded by United States interests.
Sounds about right.
You know, Hitler was Time's Man of the Year. And of course, Trump is now Time's Person of the Year because, you know, we have to be, like, totally progressive. And so now there's all these parallels where people are claiming that, oh, look, Trump is Person of the Year, Man of the Year. And Hitler was Man of the Year.
So they're the same person. See?
Yeah,
see?
They're the same.
We told you. We told you. Yeah, it's true. Clear evidence.
Yeah, so this whole fake news thing, like we were saying, it's just creating a compounding effect on the echo chamber of left-leaning thought that exists in Facebook and other social media platforms. And I think that as this progresses, and I use that term advisedly, it's going to create a backlash against these things. And Trump was one of the first sort of examples, or maybe the second example. I think Brexit was actually one of the first examples. And I was actually telling
you... Just get it wrong, just straight up wrong.
Yeah, totally wrong.
Doesn't own up to it.
Yep, they don't take any ownership. They straight up lie about things and just continue on and keep doing the same thing.
And then when the things don't turn out the way they want them to, they just say everybody on the other side is just stupid.
Yep.
And racist and misogynist and a bigot and xenophobic or whatever their slur of the day is.
Yeah, and what's beautiful is back when Trump said that if there was any evidence of impropriety in the election that he wouldn't necessarily accept the results right away, he was vilified for that. And yet, here we are, you know, a month or two later, and that's all the left's doing is bitching and moaning and complaining and whining about something that they denounced previously, and now they're all strict constitutionalists saying that, oh, the Electoral College technically doesn't have to vote for the person who's the popular person in the state, and they can choose of their own volition what they want to do. You know, all of a sudden, like, they're all, like, Federalist Papers, like, fucking scholars, and it's goddamn ridiculous because it's so two-faced, you know. The Constitution is a living, breathing document when I want it to be, but
it's
when something... Yeah, when something goes against my way, then it's a literal document.
Yep. It's completely unprincipled. It's whatever benefits me at this current time, and I have no memory of past events, even things that I just said 5 seconds ago. I just have no memory. Just whatever I need right now in the moment to be true is true. Deal with it.
Yep, bringing it back to Idiocracy, I saw a lot of people commenting in the last couple of months about how the Trump election process, the election cycle, and his win is evidence that Idiocracy is a, you know, present-day biographical film.
Yes. Yeah, even Judge himself has compared Camacho to Trump and says that he's no prophet because he was off by 490 years. Now, it's true. I mean, Camacho is a very bombastic character who speaks in very simple terms to people and is very open about his, I don't know, what threats and whatnot, which is different than the normal slimy, stab you in the back style of politician we're used to. I prefer my enemy to be stupid and out in the open, where you can see them and know what they're doing, as opposed to the slimy back alley underhanded deals that they're doing these days. But that's just me.
Your individual preference.
Yeah, I like to know what my enemies are doing. And they're only my enemies because they attack me all the time.
Yeah, that's right. So, hey, I know we've been going for quite a while, and we've touched on Idiocracy quite a bit and try to come back to it. Is there any... You want to do like a closing segment here and then start to wind it down, or how are you feeling?
Well, I don't really I like that there's a character named Beef Supreme in the movie. Fantastic name. I don't really remember the movie as well, obviously. It's been a decade since I've seen the thing. But it's an example of, I mean, obviously it's a comedy and a parody. It kind of plays off the devolution of man, played up by other authors like H.G. Wells and The Time Machine, that sort of thing. So it's not a completely original idea, but it's another way of showing just how impossible it is to predict the future. Nobody knows the future, and it's really hard to predict. Certain events you can predict here and there, but nobody has a complete picture of what the future is going to look like. I mean, if you look back at science fiction authors decades in the past, I mean, people were predicting we'd live on Mars, we'd be flying cars, who knows? But they're all wrong, and Idiocracy is wrong. There are certain elements that are probably correct. Who knows? Are we getting stupider? Maybe in a certain sense, yeah. But we're also living in the information age, and information is easier and cheaper to get than ever before.
And I think actually the trend line on IQ is growing, and so I have to keep readjusting it because an IQ of 100 is supposed to be the mean, and so it's had to increase over time.
Mm. Well, I don't entirely trust IQ tests, but they are a certain measure of some things, I suppose.
Yeah, they are one measure of a particular thing, yes.
Yeah, but it's by no means a measure of overall intelligence or aptitude or ability to learn anything. But, Idiocracy is a fun movie. I don't think it was Judge's strongest work. Oh, Daniel, I had an idea for a rating system on how good this is. Let's try this out. I didn't talk about this in the previous show, but I had this thought occur to me. How good this movie is based on how terrible of a person you would sit next to and watch it. So if it's the most amazing movie, you would sit next to like a George W. Bush or a Hitler or a Stalin. But if it's like this amazing movie or this terrible movie, you have to be sitting next to like Ayn Rand or Murray Rothbard or somebody like that. So who would you watch this movie? How good of a movie is this? How terrible of a person would you watch it with?
Okay, so this is a measure of how good the movie is in contrast to how terrible a person I would tolerate sitting next to?
Correct. Complicated, and you have to think about it. But this is what I do.
Yeah, I got it. This is beyond my scope right now, man. I feel like I'm a victim of Idiocracy, and I feel like I've been dumbed down quite a bit, so I'm not quite understanding exactly what we're going for here. But I think it was an interesting and fun movie to watch.
Yeah.
So I guess I would watch it with a rather terrible person.
Okay.
And still tolerate watching the movie. Like, I mean,
what do you say,
are we talking
Hillary
like
Clinton?
Homeless and they smell bad?
Would you? I don't know. You tell me. Would you sit next to a homeless person that smelled bad? Would you sit next to a Hillary Clinton?
Or Barack Obama?
Would you?
I don't know. I don't know if I could stand it. I don't know.
It
did remind me, though, that there was a funny meme going around that said, Trump's so bad that he kicked a black family out of their house and moved in. Or is going to, or something like that.
Right. It's cute. Like, kind of like the Orange is the New Black memes. Those are kind of cute.
I don't know. Who's the person you would tolerate sitting next to see this film?
Well, I haven't seen this movie in a long time. So it probably wouldn't have to be, it couldn't be anybody that's really bad. I couldn't sit next to like a politician. Wouldn't be worth it. Used car salesman.
Okay, like the Better Call Saul variety?
Yeah, you know, someone's slimy. I know they're slimy. You know they're lying to you.
Smarmy.
Kind of the deal. It's still a voluntary action.
So it's
basically a gun to your head.
A politician without the coercion.
Yeah. That's probably where I'm at. So, yeah,
all
that's
right.
It. Me, buddy. Decent. I remember it being decent. I think Office Space is my favorite Judge movie.
Yeah, Office Space is very good. It's entertaining. It's rewatchable. It's quotable.
Just don't watch the made-for-TV version. It's terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Changes so many jokes.
Cut out all the good parts. A bunch of commercials pressing near the end.
Changes the music. Disney, it's not even Ice Cube. Feels good to be a gangster. It changes to something else. It's totally wrong.
You know, the one thing I hope that he did get right in Idiocracy is the evolution of the name of Fuddruckers.
Yeah.
Changing into, you know, over time, Buttfuckers.
Yeah, that'd be good. Hopefully that's what happens. If Fuddruckers is even a thing, 490 years, that'd be a record for any company to last that long.
Yeah,
Are there some, like, ancient, like, companies that make like olive oil or something that have been around for hundreds of years?
I did see recently there's some bank in Italy that had been around for 400 or 500 years, but I think they're in trouble and shutting down.
Okay, well, companies don't last very long, and for Fuddruckers to last that long, it would probably need to change its name at some point.
Yeah. Statists all believe that corporations are just going to take over and live forever and monopolize everything. And become de facto governments. Like, the worst-case scenario for statists is that it'll just become a corporate state.
Right. We don't already have one. So, yeah, the worst-case scenario is that corporations would take over and become a government.
Yeah, the worst-case scenario is what has already happened.
Yep. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Sounds like progress to me.
Right, baby.
All right, well, let's wrap this up. This has been the Reed Rothbard Podcast. We have books, lectures, articles, this podcast. We have the Enemy of the State podcast. We got Amazon links, Liberty Classroom, a whole bunch of other stuff that we push on our website, ReedRothbard.com. We are now on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, a bunch of other social media platforms. Find us, like us, share us, smoke signal us, whatever you have to do. We do appreciate you. And what else? I guess we'll do another show. We're going to do a Christmas special pretty soon here. It'll be about a Christmas carol. We may or may not have a guest on with us. I've been reaching out to some people. So that might be a trial run on the whole having a guest thing. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, keep tuned. Check readrothbard.com. We try to keep that updated. And I'm going to say goodnight. Robert, feel free to say what you want to say. Say your piece, and we'll peace out.
Peace out, Robert. Good night, Robert. You're the best, Robert. Take care, everybody. The Chipmunks. C-H-I-P-M-U-N-K. We're the Chipmunks. Guaranteed to brighten your day. Do-do. Do-do-do-do. Do-do. Do-do-do-do.